If you're more of a visual learner or you like seeing charts, breakdowns, and exploring other topics, check out our Student Loan Planner YouTube channel. We've got quick explainer videos, deep dives, smart money tips you can actually see in action. Just search Student Loan Planner on YouTube and hit subscribe. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. Today, I thought I would talk about something that with the war in the Middle East right now going on, I thought it would be interesting to chat about what you should do with your student loans in the next recession. The last time I did this was something like maybe 2018, 2019, and then the COVID recession, which was very brief, came out of nowhere and wrecked student loans. So hopefully this is not a repeat of that. Hopefully this episode is just a long-term conversation about what to do about your student loans in the next recession, because eventually we know it's going to happen. With all the new rules on student loans, with all the new changes to federal student loans, you know, how will you be prepared to have your family's finances be secure during that next recession and hopefully have student loans not negatively impact you? Let me talk a little bit about a couple key ideas that I've got for you today. One of those key ideas is simply, can you slow down your payments? So if you think about this idea, if a recession happens, stock market prices are going to go down probably. Now, if stock market prices go down, ideally, you would be at least able to invest more money instead of paying down debt. That kind of makes sense in a recession. If stocks crash, if there's investments that are good to make, have good valuations, you'd want to have extra cash lying around to put money into those investments instead of paying down extra money on your debts. How would you potentially do that? If you have federal student loans, then there's really one major way you can reduce your payments, and that's recalculate your payment. So the way to do that manually is to go to studentaid.gov/IDR and then to enter in your information and say, recalculate my payment manually, put in that your income fell. If it did, you have to be truthful, of course. If your income fell, you can get that RAP plan payment or IBR payment recalculated to a lower amount of money. Now, this is very helpful if people have lower incomes during recessions. They have a bonus that they don't get anymore because times are tough. You know, that is the whole idea of, you know, if essentially of recalculating your payment if your income fell. So that's for federal student loans, right? What about private student loans? Private student loans, usually they have a required payment that you already know what you have to make. Let's say you have $200,000 of private student loans that you refinance at a 5%. Let's say your payment is $2,000 a month. You're paying it back on a 10-year term. The question is, if that's your payment, right? If there's a recession, you can't stop the payment unless you want to go into default. You can, in some cases, pause the payment if you lost your job temporarily, but in general, you're expected to make payments on private student loans with a specific dollar amount no matter what. And that really does cause people a lot of stress. If I think about the years I've been doing this, the times when people are facing economic challenges, that's when the private student loans are really a hard thing for people to deal with. So I think it's real important to think through, what are you going to do if you have any private student loan payments when that inevitable recession does occur? In talking about this, I want to talk about if you already have a private student loan payment, should you be worried? And for most of our audience, the answer is definitely not. You don't need to be worried for a few different reasons. So first off, even if you look at unemployment rates among people with professional degrees in really bad recessions, the unemployment rates are really not bad at all. If you look at the percentages, I believe it's single-digit percentages of people that are unemployed, even in really bad recessions, that have dental, medical, you know, veterinary-type degrees. Now, it's true that people might be getting less discretionary care, right? So if you are a veterinarian, you're probably going to be more negatively impacted by a recession than say, a physician. And that's just sort of because you see, generally speaking, if something like spending on pets, part of it is discretionary spending, you know, you see that being more impacted by economic conditions than something that's, you know, not as impacted by economic conditions, right? So, for example, if you have a ton of patients that, you know, you accept Medicare for, right, your reimbursement rates are probably not going to fall during recessions, so your income is probably going to be somewhat stable. Now, of course, if you're a cosmetic dentist, that could cause you to be impacted negatively during a recession. That's, you know, something to think about. In terms of security of income, most of our audience can feel secure about that. Now, what about refinancing in the next recession? What about restructuring your student loans to get a lower payment or a lower interest rate in the next recession? Will it be possible? And to explain my thoughts on that, I thought I would share a little bit about something called BBB credit spreads. So what does that mean? BBB are the the lowest rated company corporate credit that is considered investment grade. So when a company needs to borrow money, they're going to go to the bond markets. They're going to say, hey, we want to borrow $100 million at, you know, 5% interest or 6% interest, right? And how they calculate that. They're going to look at, generally speaking, this is simplifying things, but they're going to look at whatever the government yield is, and they're going to add whatever their what's called credit spread is based off of their credit rating. Now, the reason I like to use this BBB credit spread as an equivalent of what's going on in the economy for borrowing conditions is it shows essentially what riskier companies have to borrow at, right? So that it really does show what's called credit risk, which is the two different things that determine what somebody's interest rate are, or is interest rate risk and credit risk, right? And so there's the prevailing level of interest rates in the economy, which is generally influenced by what the government's borrowing at. And then there's the amount that riskier companies and riskier consumers are borrowing at, which is generally subject to credit conditions. So if credit conditions are really bad because there's a recession, that means people are going to have a hard time getting any good rates on refinanced loans. So let me give you an example of this. During the peak of the panic during COVID, credit spreads for BBB credit, which again is kind of the lowest rated company credit that's still considered investment grade, right? Below that, it's junk bonds. Today, that spread is at 1.1%. So in other words, let's say the government yield is 4.4, add 1.1 to that, that's about 5.5. So you might say, okay, a BBB rated company bond coming to market might borrow at around 5.5% for a 10-year loan. I mean, give or take. That's today. Now, you know, if you think about how student loan refinancing works, what a lot of these companies are doing is they're coming to the bond markets and they're saying, hey, you know, we at SoFi or Navient, and this is how they used to do it. SoFi has a bank now, but we want to borrow, you know, $100 million to lend to consumers for student loan refinancing. And then let's say that they secure, you know, a 5.5% interest rate, then they turn around and lend to consumers at 6%, and they're making that 0.5% profit on the spread from that transaction. So that's in general how student loan refinancing rates are pretty much set. You know, thinking about what happens during market panics or recessions, if during COVID that spread peaked at 4.8%, what you would do is you take whatever the 10-year treasury bond yield is, let's hypothetically say it's 3%. Well, you would add 4.8 to that, and that would be the yield that you'd be borrowing at as a consumer if you could get a refinancing. So that's like 3 plus 4.8 is 7.8%. That's BBB companies. In reality, during that panic during COVID, it was worse than that. Like the credit spread widened out, I think even more than that for like consumer types of credit. Basically, the whole refinancing market pretty much completely shut down. I mean, I remember that time in April of 2020, volume fell off a cliff for refinancing. Almost nobody was refinancing because the rates were so bad because the lenders couldn't get money to lend, basically, at attractive interest rates. Is that as bad as it gets? Well, let's look at 2008's financial crisis and look at those credit spreads. So in December 2008, those credit spreads peaked at 7.8%. That's much worse than 4.8, right? So think about 7.8% credit spreads. In that kind of situation, nobody's getting any credit anywhere. Now, in December 2009, credit spreads had plunged from 7.8 to December 2008 to all the way down to 2.48 in December of 2009. So that is a massive, massive drop in those credit spreads. And what we saw is in the early 2010s, basically the student loan refinancing market was created. You had a bunch of companies that got founded in the very early 2010s. And, you know, one of the big reasons why was because credit spreads were tight enough that they could come to the market, borrow at an attractive interest rate, and then lend to consumers at higher interest rates and make the profit on the spread between those two numbers. Again, it's a great deal. You're making money on that if you're a lender. But when that credit spread falls apart, that's when you're not able to borrow money anymore. What does that mean for a consumer? The next time we have a bad recession, you probably will not be able to refinance your student loans. This is also true for people needing to borrow for school. If we have a really bad recession, you either have to borrow probably at high interest rates, or maybe you would not be able to borrow really at all for school. And therein lies the problem for the OB3 bill that was created with these very low borrowing caps. If there's a normal economy and credit spreads are at only 1%, which is basically around the level that they're at right now, people are going to be able to borrow. People are going to be able to borrow no problem for school if they need to. Like there was a period during 2022 where credit spreads widened out to like 2%, give or take, but they have been, you know, really below 3% on the BBB credit spread, it's really been below that level, but except in COVID, during the entire like 2010 to the 2026 era. So if you think about a world where, you know, we're asking consumers to borrow private student loans to fund their graduate school, that's only going to work if the economy doesn't fall apart. And when and if the economy falls apart, what typically happens is, you know, the party that favors more government intervention does better politically. So you'd probably expect Democrats to do very well in the next time there's a significant recession, because that's the party that's demanding intervention, you know, more so than Republicans typically. And voters usually recognize that in periods of recession. Voters are afraid. They vote for the party that wants more government involvement. That's what happened in 2008. Now, again, how do you lower your student loan payment? One of the best things you could do to lower your student loan payment is make sure that your private student loan payment today is a number that you're comfortable with. You might say, why would I ever refinance to a higher interest rate? That sounds like a terrible idea. Well, let me give you an example. Let's say you've got a $250,000 loan, you refinance at, you know, 6% or something, and the payment's $2,500 a month. Well, it might not be crazy if you could get a 6.25 to refinance it to a higher interest rate, ever so slightly higher interest rate, but to do a 20-year fix instead of a 10. Now, that might bring you down your payment to something like $1,700 a month. Now, is that really worth doing? Maybe not. Maybe it's fine to leave it as is, but keep in mind that you will not be able to do that refinancing during a recession. So if your payment that you would be facing of $2,500 a month would be a little bit steep for you during a recession, then that's a good reason why you might consider restructuring your loan to do actually a longer-term loan. Remember, with student loan refinancing, there's no prepayment penalty, so you could always pay extra if you wanted to. And, you know, there's no kind of problem with doing that. Now, this is for private student loans or for federal student loans that you know you want to pay off eventually. I'm actually seeing an interesting rise in the number of people whose required income-based payments are much, much higher than their 20-year refinanced rates, just because the 20-year refinanced rate, you know, is often like 1% or 2% lower than their federal rate, and they're doing a 20-year term, and it's not based on income. So I am seeing, you know, this uptick in people who have actually much lower payments by doing a refinancing instead of sticking with the government options. Now, that's not to say that you should abandon the government options. If you're going for PSLF, please stick with government options. If you're eligible for the 20-year new IBR plan and you have a, you know, a debt-to-income ratio above 2-to-1, definitely stick with the government options and the 20-year forgiveness programs. But for a lot of the people out there that are thinking about, you know, their student loans, getting rid of them eventually, I will be covering more strategies on how to do that in a really smart way to keep stress low as we have more and more people pushed into doing student loan refinancing and paying off their loans instead of holding onto them forever like we've had it in the past. But let me say this, during a recession, what's probably going to happen is you will see a redoing of the student loan rules. And if the Democrats are in power, or if they have significant levers on the, or, you know, significant numbers of control over the bodies of government, like they have one, at least one of the houses in Congress and maybe even the White House, if they have at least some leverage at the negotiating table, they will probably renegotiate the rules, right? The student loan rules right now are now reflecting a uniformly Republican view of what student loan policy should be. Will it continually be a uniformly Republican view? Probably not. If you think about the formula for setting interest rates on federal student loans, where they set like a margin that people borrow at, right? The way they determine the formula, that was a bipartisan bill that calculated what the interest rates were going to be. And that's been around for a long time. Now, this bill, OB3, is fairly new. It's probably going to be in place certainly for the duration of the Trump administration. But after that administration, all bets would be off, in my opinion, if we had a recession that increased fear in the economy and people were demanding the government to, you know, do something. Hey, please do something, right? So this is a pretty interesting question to think about, right? Can you get a lower payment right now? If you can, should you take advantage of that? And again, what I mean is a lower required payment. Of course, you can always pay extra, and you should pay extra if you're able to and if you want to get rid of your student loans faster. I mean, certainly with higher stock market valuations, certainly with the economy doing pretty well, certainly with the goal of people getting out of student loan debt, you know, that being a wonderful thing to do because it's not tax deductible. It's a great idea to pay extra on your student loans if you have the money and you don't have any other major pressing goals that you want that money to accomplish for you. Again, keep in mind, have the long-term view, right? Whether you're going for forgiveness or PSLF or refinancing or whatever it is, as long as you have adequate downside protection, that might be disability insurance or term life insurance, or it could be two spouses working in different kinds of fields, or it could be significant savings you built up, or it could be just a high risk tolerance, right? Where you're just willing to roll the dice on not getting unemployed or not getting disabled or something like that. If you look at the math, most people are actually going to be just fine retiring and when most people tend to retire, like 60, 65, as long as you're doing at least the amount in your 401k that gets you a match. And as long as you make reasonable decisions in housing and cars, like most people are actually in better shape than they think. I will say that's a lot more true for people that tend to hire financial planners because, you know, interestingly enough, certain people ask for directions, certain people don't. People who tend to hire a financial planner tend to be a little bit better off than people who don't because they're thinking about their future, right? Versus just sort of stumbling through it. But I will say anyways that like people with professional degrees, more so than not, are doing okay. So you think about like, is it okay to not pay extra my student loans? Yes, it's okay. You'll be fine, most likely. Is it good to get rid of them if you can? Like, is it good to get excited about it? Sure, yeah, get excited about it. But with everything that's going on in the world and all of the different challenges that people face and, you know, challenges with mental health and satisfaction and jobs and just personal happiness and stuff, just remember there's so much more important things in the world than just getting rid of your student loans. Hopefully that's some good encouragement in today's podcast on there's so many more things in the world that are more important than student loans. And don't fret about the student loans. There's always strategies to deal with them. Obviously, that's what we specialize in. If you want to talk about it, studentloanplanner.com/book. If you need a one-time plan, if you want ongoing, slpwealth.com and click the start here button. And then if you want to just ask a question for the pod, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. Thanks for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Have a great rest of your week. Thank you for listening to this show. If you are not already getting our weekly newsletter every Thursday, you are missing out. We break down student loan news, updates, money tips, all in one helpful newsletter. Sign up for free at studentloanplanner.com/newsletter if you're not already getting these important weekly updates every Thursday.